And we are back with episode 253 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host. Then tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. And now I have to add assassination to the list of things you can do with the OED magnifying glass.
This is Bronson from Australia, and I'm pretty sure they advertised that one on the back of the packet.
All I can say is that when you are a cab driver in New York, I guess you really will encounter just about everything, won't you? Including Jesus. But anyway, we are going to be talking about three big shows again this episode, and that will be Homeland, Person of Interest, and Supernatural. But first, Edmund, if you could please.
We will absolutely discuss many things in these episodes that you don't want to know about beforehand. So yes, you will be spoiled, but we have, as always, waited a week or so before we do that, so you've had a chance to watch them.
Absolutely we have. And we are going to start with an episode of Homeland, and here is the promo.
Did you think it would be easy? That you could betray me and just walk away?
Peter Quinn is one of mine.
Why would Estes put a off-the-book Black Ops guy in charge of a straight-up intelligence operation?
Maybe he doesn't trust you.
Carrie's been in an accident. DC police found a car on 17th Street all smashed up. It was broadsided.
Is she hurt?
They can't find her.
What do you mean they can't find her?
Generation after generation must suffer and die. We are at war. I'm a soldier.
You still don't get it, do you?
Okay, well, that promo at least had a relative lack of F-bombs, but Homeland, Season 2, Episode 10, Broken Hearts. Brody and Walden develop a chink in their political relationship, and it may impact their future, while Dana and Finn come to an understanding concerning their differences. Meanwhile, Carrie discovers she's not as looped in as she thought. No, she's just loopy. wow, okay. So, last season, we had a few moments where it felt like the writers just decided to really push the boundaries of what made sense within their universe, and they managed to pull back from the brink. Something tells me this is the same type of situation, only they managed to get through 10 out of 12 episodes before they hit that wall, but wow. Okay, this was a little surprising, to say the least.
This was a little less Homeland and a little more 24.
Yes, it was. And late season bad 24.
where shock value mattered
more than actual, you know, plot consistency or logic. Mm-hmm. This kind of challenged my my willing suspension of disbelief, let's put it that way. In particular, while I acknowledge that one can hack into a pacemaker, it is a real problem. The whole scene with the quote-unquote assassination of the vice president was so over the top. It's just like, yeah, there's pretty much no way for Brody to come back from that one. Other than the fact that, granted, nobody else on the show actually saw him in that office. But come on. Mm-hmm. You can't do that and it not change his character in some fairly fundamental ways. Anyway, what did you guys think of that?
It was sort of consistent in terms of bringing back that whole motivation from the first season, but certainly for a show that had been, you know, very good at, you know, playing that game of is he or isn't he, will he or won't he, they were definitely taking a step back from that, you know. But then again, the end of season one, you know, was him, you know, basically, I mean, he did push the button. But for the broken connection, you know, everything would have ended with a bang last season.
That's,
you know,
true.
So, I didn't necessarily see that as completely inconsistent, but certainly, I mean, in terms of throughout this episode, I mean, the whole plotting was, you know, sort of, you know, what was way over the top. I mean, even just from the whole opening gambit of, there's been this sort of people have commented on it, you know, numerous times, you know, sort of, you know, the thing of Carrie, you know, bopping along listening to jazz in her car, which they, you know, just completely played off of. You're thinking like, oh, good, Carrie listening to jazz in her car, and bam, with the accident. And, the whole setup to the assassination, you know, where, Brody, you know, managed to, you know, get away from the handlers, you know, into this handy, empty apartment so he can scream at Abu Nazir in apparent privacy with nobody noticing, you know. And I mean, but what was interesting to me was a lot of this is stuff that was sort of, you know, it was after the fact that, you know, that it was all sinking in. I mean, in terms of the way the show is constructed and the way the performances draw you in, I mean, I was pretty much carried along for, you know, while I was actually watching it. You know, I mean, there were sort of little niggles in the back of my head of, you know, like, yeah, you know, they're really pushing it this time. But at the same time, I've gotten sort of so invested in these characters that, you know, I was, you know, there was more of a willing suspension during the episode, and then it was sort of trying to piece it together afterwards that you start realizing it's like, you know, yeah, they really pushed it right up to the edge, if not over this time. You know, certainly, I mean, you know, and then, I mean, on top of all, you know, just the what was going on with Carrie being taken and Brody being forced into this, you know, and then at the same time, and the CIA politics coming more to the fore with Estes apparently, you know, looking to not just clean up Brody, but anybody who knew about the true story of the drone strikes. That side of it certainly, you know, did make more sense, you know, and even within the over the top stuff, I mean, the Carrie Nazir confrontation, you know, even though it felt a little bit stagey, it, you know, and certainly was, you know, didn't hold a candle to the Q&A interrogation, but you know, I did still enjoy that, because, you know, because to me it was in character for her that, you know, yeah, even in that situation she's still going to, you know, go after him and challenge his thought processes. Definitely the most out there episode of Homeland I think that they've ever done. You know, the way this whole season's been going, where they just, you know, they've been pushing all along, and, you know, and they've pushed it really far now, and we'll just have to see what, you know, how they can bring it together in the last two episodes. They've definitely set themselves quite a task with this one.
Mm-hmm. Well, really, it comes down to the fact that they are going to have to prove that they're not going to let this go off the rails completely in the last two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have to make sense. And they can get away with maybe one really unbelievable thing going on here. But if this becomes just the beginning of a chain, that's going to be unfortunate. Yeah. I don't think we want to see the show go that far off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's really how I where they left it with me, was just that, yeah, it was all very enjoyable and very entertaining, but at the same time, it just left me wondering if we were going to feel like this was the turning point for the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of it, too, was having Carrie out of it for so long just took something away from the episode. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but it felt like they needed to have that interaction between the characters for it to really work as well as perhaps they had intended. Because we know that when you have Carrie and Brody in the same scene, it's just going to be interesting. It's going to be great stuff. Frankly, you know, I think that they're overplaying their hand with this whole thing with Saul and Estes and Quinn. It's okay as a subplot, but it's starting to dominate things, and I don't know that it's quite that interesting as they think it is. I certainly hope it doesn't become the main focus of the end of the season, although I have a feeling it's going to be a major part of it, which is not the best option, but there we are.
You know, then again, last season I didn't see how they could pull Brody out of that situation and make it believable, and they did. So, you know, I mean, yeah, they've set themselves a much more, you know, I have a higher bar. than last time. But
Ronstam, I mean, what do you think of how this is going?
Well, I agreed a lot with what Evan, you were saying earlier, just that it's very much in hindsight that you realize that you sort of see the flaws in this episode. While I was watching it, I was engaged, although I could just had the sense of something being off, and it was a bit more 24 than you usually get out of the show. It struck me as just the writers decided, like, you know, they've got three episodes, they've got to, you know, get a bit further in the plot and stuff like that, and this was their, we need to ram things through to get to what we need to do in the last two episodes. And so you get a plot that's a bit shakier than you typically get, and... You know, in order to get the big story beats that, you know, the writers feel that they need to get through for the last couple episodes, things like what happens to the vice president, which, you know, while I was watching it, I thought that was a terrific scene of just Brody really losing it with the VP for the first time. And there were other good moments. I did like the tete-a-tete with Brody and with Carrie and Nazia. But yeah, this was weak by the standards of Homeland. It wasn't completely abysmal, but it felt less.
Mm. Yeah, it didn't feel worthy of the show.
Mm.
That's the way I would probably put it, and maybe the best way to put it is that it was too much like 24, where you had gotten to the point where you kind of anticipated or expected them to have these outlandish things happen because that's the way that they manage to keep the plot moving. But they don't have to come up with some bizarre reason why something is going to take 3 hours instead of 2 hours or whatever else. You know, they can skip that part if they have to. They can move to the next thing. They don't need to come up with these bizarre, you know, plot twists just to keep things moving. Or at least they shouldn't feel like they have to.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that they got into the idea that, oh, hey, you know, we need to do something really kind of a little bit bigger because this is Homeland and we don't want to lose that momentum that we've been building. And yet, at the same time, the way that they chose to do it actually, in my opinion, kind of robbed a little bit the show of something. So it sounds like we all agree with that.
Yeah, but I mean, to my mind, I mean, it's kind of the culmination of what's been going on all season, you know, where they kept being, you know, these big elements, you know, that we thought were going to take, you know, like the entire season, you know, I mean, from, you know, Brody getting taken in to the attack at Gettysburg, you know, to this where, I felt even last episode, I mean, you know, the whole thing, you know, the tag team, you know, swooping in and wrapping them up at the end of that episode, you know, where it's like, you know, no, they, you know, they keep sort of trying to push the envelope, and it was like, you know, no, they got to this point in the season and realized, no, well, wait a minute, we've done everything, you know, what can we do now? So,
right,
you know, yeah, I mean, there does seem to have been, you know, this sort of deliberate attempt to just, you know, really accelerate the plot in this season compared to last season, and you know, I hope they can pull it together in the last couple of episodes the way they did last year.
I'm confident they can. I felt like this was the episode where they decided we need to shorten things up in order to get to what we need to. So it less that the show had gone off the rails, more that this was their cheat.
Mm. Well, if it's just once, I'm not really going to be too upset. However, if the rest of the season feels like just one big crazy town type of thing going on, I mean, it's, yeah, if it goes back to being more like Homeland, great. If it's going to continue to be more like a season of 24 where they just start having the, you know, president start killing people and stuff like that, then yeah, it's going to be a little bit ridiculous. Because the problem for me is that how did they get back from this? Because now the vice president is dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yep. It does more or less pay off what it started last season. So what now? So now Abu Nazir is just going to be here in the States plotting, you know, the next big terrorist plot, and Brody is now going to be doing that with him. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's where they go from here. That's kind of, that's the big question. And I know that we've had that question before and they've managed to answer it relatively well. So I think they've earned the benefit of the doubt. It's just that now they've given us doubts. So,
yeah, I mean, I know one thing that I've speculated on internally, and I will say it out loud now for the first time, but was, I mean, you know, once I learned that whole thing of, you know, that no, the original idea was to have Brody go through with it last season, you know, and then they had to recalibrate once they realized what they had on their hands with Damian Lewis and Claire Danes, you know, kind of reading between the lines, you know, some of the statements at the beginning of the season, you know, I really do wonder if they are actually, you know, going to do what, you know, what would seem to be the shocking thing with, you know, the two Emmy-winning actors, and that, you know, perhaps Brody, you know, maybe Brody will not make it through the end of the season.
Well, there's been a lot of hints to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, You know, so, you know, that, you know, if they are setting it up to go that direction, you know, that could certainly make it very interesting, since, you know, especially since presumably it would be, you know, leading up to a major Carrie Brody, you know, denouement to this whole thing. So,
Well, I mean, it might work if they then use that as a, well, what is Carrie going to do now type of situation?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because she is kind of insane.
Fixated?
Yeah, fixated, sure. That works.
But, you know, well, except, of course, so was he. I mean, that was the other thing this episode, you know, was, you know, making crystal clear that...
Yeah, I'd say so. Henry gave this one a 7. Bronze Thumb, what do you think?
Yeah, 7 sounds about right. Especially the more you kind of go into the hindsight, you see the flaws and the foibles. And but there's definitely things about the episode to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Edmund? What would you give it?
Yeah, no, I'd say a 7 as well. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you'd asked me right after the episode, I would have said an 8. But now it's after talking it out and thinking it out more, it's a 7.
Yep, I'm going to have to agree. And that's definitely the lowest scored episode of the season so far. So a little bit surprising, but still, we said this about Arrow too. That wow, the worst episode of the season so far is average.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's by far the lowest, so we've had many episodes that were much higher than this. So it's not like the show is suddenly terrible, it's just had a little bit of a dip. Alright, well, we're going to go ahead and move on then to our second show under discussion, and that would be Person of Interest. And here is the promo.
Mitch, be there. Always, Mr. East.
A refugee with nowhere to turn.
American dream. I trade all that in to see my family one more time.
How far will he go?
They're gambling debts? Is he dealing drugs?
To get his family back.
I don't want any trouble.
Unfortunately, you and I don't have much to say on that matter.
Person of Interest. Edmund, why don't you go ahead and give us the recap for this one?
Sure. This is Person of Interest, Season 2, Episode 9, COD. Reese and Finch must track a cab driver whose number has come up, but they don't know if he's involved or if one of his passengers may be the intended victim or predator. Meanwhile, Simmons continues to put pressure on Fusco. Yeah, this episode I felt was a certain carryover from the previous episode, not in terms of any of the plot things, but in terms of having, you know, a sort of relatively standalone Person of Interest story. Decent enough, but not really that intriguing. You know, and then, you know, the stuff I enjoyed most was, you know, sort of the return of Simmons and HR and Fusco getting dragged back in again, and you know, and then I think we were talking about this with Arrow about bringing the whole gallery of villains back in with the HR trying to realign with Elias, and interesting way that wound up backfiring on them, but thankfully in a way that our main member of the cast does live to tell about it, since of course he's not the red shirt shot down, he's the one who's supposed to deliver the message. The whole thing of Fusco's shooting from season one sort of coming back, I mean, I know they're sort of trying to, you know, they're setting this up as, you know, this big conflict, but it's one of that's one of those things where it's, you know, no, they're trying to set it up as a big conflict, but I still see it being resolved relatively easily. But you know, so that I wasn't quite so interested in. But yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, this didn't have the sort of oddball romantic interest of the last episode, but with this episode, it was, you know, that you know, yeah, I mean, they're sort of, you know, keeping on doing their day job and taking care of this week's number, you know, but, you know, really the stuff that was going on around the edges, and I mean, not just the Fusco HR stuff, but even, you know, some of the character background of, you know, Reese playing fetch with Bear, you know, Bear actually injecting himself into the newly reunited family. You know, those touches I've enjoyed quite a bit. You know, so yeah, I mean, a good, you know, it's sort of a good basic Person of Interest episode with you know, some things being set up for the future. You know, so not a complete standalone, but, you know, yeah, one that you know, just taking a little bit of a break before we presumably set up for more meaty stuff down the way.
Yeah, I guess for me, this was almost trying to establish that they're almost in a false sense of security right now, because mm-hmm. you've got a situation where they are more or less like they used to be back in the first season. You know, even though things have gotten a little more escalated, you know, you've got Finch back riding the computer console in his little building there. You've got Reese out there doing his thing, and you've got the person of interest of the week, and it was kind of standard. But at the same time, we know that things have definitely, they're more dangerous out there than they've probably ever been. And so, yeah, they are doing a standard case of the week type of situation, but I think it's a little more than that at this point. It's just there to kind of hint at the possibility of normality, but I don't think that the normality is actually there.
Right. Yeah.
How about you, Bronstum? Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the only one who wasn't quite as, you know, just despite the fact that this being a relatively serious episode and involving HR and one of the subplots, that it wasn't quite as awesome as some of the big episodes of Person of Interest can be. I think part of that might be the fact that the big myth arc bit was related to a subplot and had so little to do with Reese and Finch. I like the A story, but I guess maybe part of me was waiting for the two to intersect somewhere.
Hmm.
And was a bit disappointed that didn't happen.
No, this felt more like a transitional episode for all that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good word for it. And I mean, we do have another big mid-season finale next week, and I suspect that's going to be kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I would say.
But yeah, no, it was an enjoyable episode. It just wasn't as, just, it had all the elements to be a lot bigger and a lot better than I wound up finding it.
I suppose that's true. I mean, it, again, I think that it was more of just setting the stage than anything else. It certainly wasn't disappointing. It wasn't like the previous episode where it just kind of felt like they tried too hard to make a funny episode and it didn't work for them. It felt like a good, solid episode. It just wasn't big like some of the ones that we've had earlier this season. It certainly was not anything like the first few where we had Root in there, and then, you know, when we had Elias come in as something of a source of information and everything else. But it still had its value. I think maybe it was because the person of interest story was just a little predictable. It wasn't. It really was one of those types of things that you could have seen on pretty much any show. So I think that might have taken a little bit of the bloom off the rose, so to speak. But, you know, for all that, it was still done pretty well. I don't know. What would you give it, Edmund?
I would give it a 7. I really just felt it was just a straight average episode.
How about you, Bronstum?
Yeah, I'd go the same.
Yeah, I probably would, too. I guess my argument is more to say that it's not any worse than average.
No.
It's a fine episode. It just, much like we were saying about Homeland, it didn't live up to its own to the show's own high standards.
Yeah.
Although I don't think it was quite as big a misstep for Person of Interest as the Homeland episode was for that show.
Well, no, I mean, this was not that much of a drop from what we've been saying before. I mean, we pretty much give this show 8s or 9s as a regular thing, but we've had on Homeland, we've had 10s and solid 9s, and then it went down to average. It was the only episode all season that dropped that far, so it felt like a much further drop. But then, you know, we're coming off of an episode where we felt like they squandered a lot of potential when we had Mark Pellegrino on there, and they seemed to play everything up for laughs, and it didn't quite work. This was just a very standard episode of Person of Interest. You know, it probably would have been very comfortable in the first season, let's put it that way. Although I do feel like that subplot is going to come back in a big way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because this is Person of Interest, and things always come back in a big way. All right, so we are going to move on then to, well, I'm thinking this is going to at least round us out a lot higher than perhaps the last two did. This is going to be Supernatural. Let's go ahead and play the promo.
I got a body here with two holes in it. Do I need to tell you what this looks like?
Benny is
was innocent.
Vinny's a vampire.
He has never let me down.
Thanks for not giving up on me, brother.
Okay, and Bronze Thumb, if you could.
Mm-hmm. Supernatural Season 8, Episode 9, Citizen Fang. Sam asks a friend, Hunter Martin Creaser, to track Benny just to be on the safe side. However, when Martin gets word of a vampire kill in Benny's neighborhood, he takes things into his own hands, forcing Dean to make a tough choice. This is a good episode. It was certainly better than last week. It's not one of the A pluses of the show, but it did a good job of bringing some of the major character subplots to the fore. I mean, we've seen Benny a couple times already, but this was, I mean, you know, surprisingly fast they're getting around to this idea of what happens if Benny goes off the rails, and both Dean and Sam have to deal with that. And Dean is willing to jump in to defend his friend, and Sam is more suspicious, as the brothers have often tended to be, you know, when someone they know or like is on the bad. But this goes very quickly beyond devil's advocate or just common sense, because you hear the way that Dean talks about Betty, and there's something very hurt in Sam. You can really see it come out in the performance. And then at the same time, you get Sam's whole subplot, which had a really, really surprising end, because I, you know, didn't think the chick was actually real.
Yes.
So, I'm still waiting for something to come there, because otherwise it's just been too simple.
I definitely I definitely thought of you when she walked in and said, oh, Bronze Thumb is going to look at this and go, damn it, theory was wrong.
Something's got to happen somewhere. There's got to be more to it than simply what we've seen, especially given all of the, you know, Young and the Restless flashbacks.
I'm the one that's looking for the big conspiracy behind the slightly disappointing or very disappointing subplot. So yeah.
They laid it so well for a she's not real, there's some sort of fake memory thing going on, because all three characters have had to deal with that sort of thing, and there've been subplots in previous episodes and a lot of thematic hinting and stuff like that. And this just kind of comes out of the blue in the sense that, wait, why did you do all that stuff earlier then?
Right. Exactly. I mean, I still think that it's possible, though unlikely, that she is, in fact, not real, though perhaps not in the way that you mean. But it would be interesting if this was somehow some kind of odd hallucination of Sam's in the middle of the bar. But I think that it's possible that he did have this relationship with her, and that if she wasn't being controlled by somebody else before, that she could be now. If they decided not to bring back Rachel Miner as Meg, this would be a really interesting way to do it. To have this person that he had found this normal life with to be possessed by her would be quite a twist. And it would also do a great deal to kind of take that whole situation and make it a lot nastier. But I don't know. It's possible that she really is real, and we'll just have to deal with the fact that Sam turned into a complete boring milquetoast character for half a season. Yep. Is there any better way to put that? I guess not.
No.
No.
This could just be the most boring subplot. And,
Well, I do see some slight value in the idea of Sam being with somebody normal.
Oh, yeah.
But the way that they did it just never really worked for me. It's too...
Admittedly, you know, I'm the one who still hasn't watched the first five seasons, but even with from the time I've been watching, you know, the thing that just has still never made sense to me is that whole thing of all of those messages from Kevin, and, you know, and that Sam would just ignore them. You know, it's like, you know, no, that just seemed to be like the glaring, like, no, there's something else going on here. And it's like, no, do you really just,
And it evokes the beginning of season six, where Sam comes back and John, you in particular, just had this attitude of just like, okay, something's up. Like, they're very deliberately having him play it a certain way to mark. And it seemed like they were doing something similar again. Like, they're deliberately not telling us something and writing around it and alluding to it and preparing to kind of to make a big reveal.
Mm-hmm. So they need to do it soon.
Yes. Yes.
Like, next episode would be a really good time to do it. Like, as soon as they get back. But I think that Sam's decision to turn in Benny was a lot more interesting. Not that he actually went quite that far, but basically he decides that Dean doesn't know what he's doing. Only way to really take care of things is to have one of the hunters go and check on Benny himself and see what's going on. And of course he picks the most unstable person to do it. But yeah, that's pretty much designed to take all of the things that have been lingering in the background and just drive a big, huge wedge into that crack between the two brothers. And, oh, it just felt like it was going to explode, and it pretty much is going there.
Yeah,
I really enjoy that part, because angst between the two brothers is always one of the best things that can happen on this show, because it just...
That's the engine that Supernatural has run on for 8 years.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Without a doubt. And they're really good at doing that. But I think that they justified it pretty well in this episode. I don't think that they took any shortcuts. I think that Dean has had a really good point all season long. Why did Sam abandon the mission? And Edmund, mm-hmm. It's like you were saying, okay, so even if he did have this regular relationship with what's her name? All of a sudden I forget. That's Amelia. Okay.
Yeah.
Then there is that thing about but why did you completely ignore all of those messages from Kevin? It just doesn't make sense. At the same time, Dean was off in purgatory, and he had to rely on Benny to keep him alive. So it makes sense that Dean would feel right now that he can trust Benny more than he can trust Sam. And then for Sam to come around and effectively stab him in the back, absolutely this would cause a problem. But I also feel like the writers have done this really smart job of taking the gap that was created when Bobby left and finding ways to take his functions within the story and disperse them through other characters. You know, in a way we have, obviously, Sam and Dean are having some of these issues because there's no Bobby there to force them to recognize that they're being idiots. Or idiots, take your pick.
Yes.
All right. But then you've got Garth is very much in the background, taking care of all the things that Bobby used to do very much in the background. But then I feel like Benny is almost a stand-in for Bobby in Dean's eyes. That, you know, there's a very similar personality there. And Dean can deal with that. That it's relatable. It's helping him through all of these issues. And Sam just isn't acknowledging that. And, you know, it bears remembering that Sam is only coming back to this because he feels this sense of obligation. But he you know, as we said before, he had chosen to ignore Kevin all this time. Is he really that invested in this? Apparently not. Yeah. And I guess that's what Amelia's presence is supposed to push right to the forefront is, okay, is he going to take this opportunity to say, you know what, Dean, this is, you can take care of this. Because as the other thing that we've been saying all season long is that this is the only time, or at least the first time in a long time, that their mission really is more about proactively trying to find a weapon that they can use to fight the bad guys better or to shut down the whole process completely. But they don't have to be doing this. I mean, yes, you could say indirectly that if Crowley manages to get his hands on the other tablets, that he could find some weapon that they don't want him to have. But so far, he hasn't done it. It's still theoretical. It's not like there is a huge threat that they're trying to stop, like the Leviathans or something like that. Sam could see this as very optional. That's all I really have to say at this point on that. How about you, Bronstein? What do you think about that?
I'm having a tough time disagreeing with anything. Yeah, I'm really not sure what else to add. Mm-hmm. It was a better episode than the last. I'm going to be kicking myself over the Amelia thing for a long time. And yeah, I don't know. This whole season of Supernatural has been very strange compared to even the last ones. And I think you definitely did touch on it, that they're trying to be more proactive than they usually are. I don't know. I'm still finding it tough to get a bead on the season as a whole.
Well, I think it's because it was Jeremy Carver's whole thing that he wanted to bring the show back to the first season aesthetic, where it was less about these big, huge, whopping arcs and more about just the adventure side of things and the psychology of the brothers. And I think that they've done that fairly well. I think that maybe it just leaves us a little bit confused because the show has been so much about these big things before that now it feels kind of odd not to have some really large problem to solve. Mm-hmm. At the same time, once they did everything with the big 5-year arc that they wanted to do, the big things that they came up with after that for the two seasons kind of felt tacked on and unnecessary. To me, this probably is the best direction for them to go. They just haven't quite brought it together yet.
What I've been finding a little bit strange is that it started out where it seemed like they were, you know, keeping up with the, you know, sort of big overarching thing that they needed to do. And then they've, with the tablets and, you know, and closing the gates and all that. And then, you know, a few episodes in, they just decided back away from that. Once Kevin and his mom, went off on their own, and they get mentioned every now and then. But yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit like they felt like, we've got to wrap things up from last season, but then go in this different direction, and it just feels a little schizoid, actually. And maybe once they come back from the break, past that wrap up stage, we'll get a better sense of where this new team is taking them.
Well, Bronstum, I mean, you've been around since the beginning as well. Wouldn't you say that this feels a lot more like the first few seasons?
Yeah, definitely.
This whole idea of, yes, there is this ongoing story arc, but it's more in the background.
Yeah, exactly. It's there's stuff that they can pick up when they choose to or get around to. There's nothing that's kind of pressing on them immediately, and it's really their own journeys of self-discovery in a sense that are driving the thing. I mean, during the second season comes to mind, where a lot of it was just very slowly figuring out what the hell's going on with Sam and the overarching journey about, finding John and everything, and how that was just, it's picked up occasionally. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're definitely echoing that time of the show, but I think it was some of the later periods that were considered the golden years, I guess. What I'm kind of taking out of this idea of Jeremy Carver wanting to get back to the beginning is that he's trying to go back to basics so that he can then build something new off of it, rather than doing what season 6 and 7 did, which was like trying to build new mythologies over the epic mythology that was already going.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's also, maybe because this allays some of the fears that I've had about the show, is that he recognizes that this could easily become an X-Files situation, where they had a mythology, and then the show lasted longer than they thought it was going to, so they just kept trying to tack on more onto the mythology, and since it was never actually conceived to be going any further, the things that they kept tacking on never quite made any sense. In this case, the things they did with the Leviathans at least felt like a coda to what happened with the Apocalypse. But you can definitely see that they still had the same problem, that it still feels like it was unnecessary. And I think that what they're trying to do is come up with something that they can use as a loose mission so that it feels like something that could happen in the supernatural universe without being so big that they can't wrap it up easily in one season. So they, I can see him coming up with just like this very relatively small thing, but it also addresses a lot of the things going on with the brothers and their mindset, and they can play in that sandbox for a while.
Yeah, and making Crowley the bad guy is a really, because he's basically the big bad right now, and that's a really clever thing, because unlike Lucifer or the Leviathans, he's not actively trying to do anything. He's trying to keep things running business as usual.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So there isn't that, they're not giving themselves a time frame. They're not making it so that, we, the audience, are constantly asking, why are you running around, hunting vampires when you've clearly got this big bad who's about to destroy the universe that you need to deal with? It's, it's a little more, they've got more freedom.
Right. And the only danger there is that this freedom becomes almost too much, that it feels like there's no direction, which is kind of what, Edmund, you're getting at, is that it feels like they just go back to it every once in a while because they feel like they have to.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm just taking the tactic that maybe they're just, that is there just so that they have some kind of arc to the season, because they want to have the brothers have something to drive them on their journeys. But that it's not, the plot in and of itself is not the point. It's the brothers that are the point, which is pretty much where the show started and what was the strength of the show at the beginning. There we are. That's kind of where my mind is on it. I give it an 8. I thought that it was solid. I don't think it was the best episode of the season, or I'm sure that they will come up with ones that are better, but I thought that it was still very solid and had a lot of layers to it. How about you, Edmund?
I can go with an 8 as well. I mean, I would say it's certainly the Benny stuff ranked a little bit higher, and then there was the disappointment that Amelia really was Amelia.
Well, yeah, I mean, the disappointment that is the Amelia storyline. Yeah. How about you, Bronstone?
Yeah, 8 sounds like a good number to me. It was you know, above average, and it was very enjoyable, that little hiccup aside.
Right. Okay, cool. I think that certainly ends us on a high note compared to our disappointments with Homeland and Person of Interest, which, again, they were disappointing but average. Hardly the worst thing that they could have been. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time.
Yeah, and you're certain. You sure? Okay, great. Just hang tight until you hear from me, okay? No, listen to me. I said hang tight. We gotta get.
Can I at least finish my burger?
We got a vamp kill, Dean. Karen Crow, Louisiana.
Huh. It's been a while since I've had some etouffee. Who's the source?
Martin Creaser.
Sorry, for a minute there, I thought you said Martin Creaser.
Crazy Martin
from the Looney Bin.
Glendale Springs discharged him last month.
And? I mean, shouldn't he be assembling toys in a padded room? What's he doing back on the job?
I asked him.
You what?
Look, he called me when he got out, okay? Asked if I had anything for him that might help him ease back into the game. He seemed okay, mostly, so I said yes. I've had him tracking Benny for the past week.
You put mostly okay Martin on Benny. What is mostly okay doing hunting at all?
Not hunting, Dean. Tracking. Observe and report only. I was crystal clear about that.
Wow, I can't believe that.
Really? Dean, you don't believe that? Because Benny's a vampire, and any hunter worth his salt isn't going to let one just walk around freely. So I had Martin keep tabs on him, and right now, it's looking like I made the right call.
So Martin's saying Benny did this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Benny's in Louisiana, drain him, folks. We should look into it.